This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. The land on which I am lucky enough to raise my son always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by us, Loz and Lou. We'll be releasing our very first Ready or Not go-to guides dropping on the 1st of April. We've created three practical and comprehensive guides starting with breastfeeding and returning to work, postpartum planning for the fourth and fifth trimester, and childcare 101. Head to our show notes to sign up for early access and a cheeky discount code.
Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the podcast that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing, and frustrating us when it comes to making work work. I'm Lou.
And I'm Loz. Gosh, I've had a bit of a day today. My hair's all over the place. I'm still in my activewear. I'm working from home. I'm glad I don't have many Zoom meetings because it's not okay. Anyway,
I think you look great.
This is what happens. Good news story for today. France made history a few weeks back when lawmakers voted to explicitly enshrine the guaranteed freedom to abortion in the country's constitution, becoming the first in the world to do so. We are sending the message to all women, your body belongs to you and no one has the right to control it in your stead, Prime Minister Gabriel Attal said before the vote.
That is a great quote.
It's amazing, but I'm surprised that they're the first in the world.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is it good news or bad news that that's happened for the first time in 2024?
Yeah.
We'll take it as a win, but it is surprising that it hasn't happened to that level before.
Great quote, though. I thought it was a nice way to start because there's been so much backlash and so much talk happening about all the things happening in America at the moment. It's nice to see that France, how do you say it? Like, how do you say it?
I don't think I'll ever be able to say France. I'm from Australia. It's France in my parts. I live in Rye on the Mornington Peninsula and I'm going to call it France. Maybe where you are in the inner suburbs of Melbourne, you should call it France. So today, what are we talking about? Why stepping away may be your best leadership move yet? Lily Allen, who I must admit I absolutely adore, shares her thoughts on career and motherhood on the Radio Times podcast, plus what our listeners wish they knew about breastfeeding, postpartum planning and childcare, because as we know, hindsight is a wonderful thing. Let's take it away, Lozzie. You go first.
Why stepping away may be your best leadership move yet. I've read a couple of articles on this. I just feel like it's quite timely for me recently, and I want to read some of them out, like two of them in particular. Stepping back from anything, so a dilemma, a relationship, or yes, even a job, is really valuable. More than anything, it provides a lot of clarity and fresh perspective. It's why writers take a break from their work and come back to it later with fresh eyes. The typos, which weren't immediately apparent, despite reading over it a gazillion times, suddenly stick out like a sore thumb, and that sentence you were agonizing over finally comes together.
That's very true with these go-to guides, actually, because
it is
more, I need to take breaks and then come back to them, and I'm sure you're the same, and then you realize little mistakes along the way.
Exactly. When you're too entrenched in something, you can't see the forest for the trees. It's no different with a job, whether this annual leave, a sabbatical, or genuinely knowing when to call it quits. Sometimes taking a breather is the right option for you, your mental health, and the organization that you're at. I don't know why I found this so fascinating, probably because I've had a bit of a pause and I've moved into contract work, which I'm really enjoying. But I think there's been certain times within my career where I feel like I haven't reached my full potential or I'm not in the right spot, but I've kind of stuck at it, not out of like laziness, but because I've had that mindset like, oh, it'll get better. You know, I've already come this far, I should keep going. And then in hindsight, which is a beautiful thing, looking back, I'm like, I should have scrapped that or called it quits or taken a break and actually thought about where I wanted to go career-wise and if that was the right organization for me and if my manager was the right manager for me long before I left. Has that happened to you or is it just me?
I'm almost the opposite. I've always been terrible at taking that next step in my career in terms of leading. I've always been given great opportunities and worked hard, but I've always found it hard to break through to the next level.
Okay.
So I would say whether that's somewhat of a choice, whether it comes down to confidence, whether it's about not fighting enough for myself and always being the person that's sort of happy to take whatever they're going to throw at me. I don't know what it is because I've always been, I guess, given more responsibility as time has gone on in my roles, but I've never taken it to the next level. So I feel like I'm almost unequipped to comment.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a girlfriend the other day about her specific role, and she's really unhappy, and I feel like she's been saying this for a while. And one of the things I said to her was, is it time to quit, or is it time to leave, or is it time to just take a pause, take a week off and maybe reevaluate whether this is the right role for you at this point in your life? I think it's also something to note that there's different times that things are suitable. Like sometimes you're not always going to be progressing forward or moving up, even though innately that's what we're told to do.
Yes.
Sometimes you're going to stagnate. And for that period of your life, that's actually perfect for where you're at because it allows you more space, more time to like focus on other things. I read some stats on this, as I always do. I'll quickly get into them.
Lozzie, I'm going to very quickly interrupt you because, as I told you before we started recording, Posey is not on my chest for the first time today. She's in the capsule after sleeping in the car.
Oh, yes.
However, she is starting to make noise. I don't know if you can hear it, but I can. So I'm just going to get her one memento. She has, of course, stopped. Let's keep going and see how we go.
So a couple of stats. 98% of the occupations in the world are less stressful than being home alone with young children or managing a young family.
That is an incredible stat. That made me, when I first read that, it made me feel a lot. It's one of those things that genuinely makes you feel seen. Like, we talk a lot about the idea of feeling seen in motherhood and feeling heard. But that one, I was thinking to myself, oh, I'm not crazy. This is really stressful. This can feel really hard at times.
It is. A study revealed that the average mum works the equivalent of 2.5 full-time jobs or about 98 hours per week, assuming 8 hours per night of sleep, which is a generous estimate.
Who's getting that?
No one. That would leave about 14 hours per week for everything else, including eating and personal grooming.
Wow.
So the study, it's wild. The study also revealed that 40% of mothers feel like their life is dominated by a never-ending to-do list. So when you've got a stressful job on the top of that, or if you've got an awful manager or if your team is a nightmare to manage, sometimes it can make a lot of sense to take a step back and just reevaluate and be like, I've got all of this stuff on my plate. What is the most important and what am I finding fulfillment out of? Another article I read, which I want to read out. People tend to believe that in their career, the trajectory should always be upward. It's a common assumption when entering the job market that if we work long and hard enough, we'll progress in our field and climb the corporate ladder. And it's a fair assumption. We spend our early years in school getting taught to get good grades, otherwise we'll fail. It's very innately ingrained in you when you're younger. So the harder you work, the better the grades you'll get. But then you leave school and you're like, oh, there ain't no grades for your job.
I know. I did so well in year 12, not as well as you. Freak, but I did really well in year 12. And then for a few years afterwards, I was thinking to myself, this isn't quite where I expected you to be, sweetie.
Exactly.
Where's the legend that you were in year 12? She ain't quite present here.
So in this article, it goes on to say, we've developed the idea that the only direction is up and anything else means that we've failed. But what happens when you can't find up? It might be that you've already reached the top of your future in that career. Maybe a job doesn't excite you anymore. Maybe external influences like politics or personal circumstances have changed your outlook. This lady goes on to say that she's been in that position and taken a bit of a sabbatical, and it goes on to like explain all the things that came to her while she's on that sabbatical. I actually don't know anyone that has ever taken a sabbatical.
No, either do I. The closest sabbatical is motherhood, which isn't really a sabbatical, but I guess it's something different.
But I do think, oh, actually, when you frame it like that, for me, actually, taking maternity leave puts so much stuff in perspective.
Same.
But I think that's because your priorities change at the same time.
Do you know what I always think is such an interesting contradiction in motherhood and feminism and career? Is that on the one hand, stepping back is exactly what I want to be doing now. I want to continue working, but I don't want to work 5 days a week in paid work. I don't even want to work 4 days a week in paid work. And part of me loves that idea of being able to step back and take it all in. And on that note, I think it sort of flies in the face of capitalism and patriarchy to be in the vein of, we can slow down. We don't always have to be pursuing that next thing. And our value isn't assigned to us via how successful we are in our careers. So there's one train of thought that I end up in. And then the other part of me comes back to those conversations like the ones we've had about female CEOs quitting, thinking, why does it always seem to be the women? Is it because motherhood has changed us and given us new sets of values in a good ways, or is it compromising? I don't know the answer, but they're such contradictions from each other.
It is. And I'm in a bit of a conundrum at the moment where I am working 3 days and I'm loving it. But part of me is thinking to myself, should I be pushing to do more? Like, should I be doing 5 days so that I'm in the office more, so that my wage is increased, so that I'm on a trajectory to continue to grow and develop? And then I'm like, is that what I want at this point in my life? As in, I am growing and developing in the role that I'm in, but I'm like, do I want to be doing 5 days? I'm not sure.
But you're also working more than 3 days a week in paid work, because we do this on top of that and outside of those hours.
This article goes on to say, even though changing paths is scary, the cost of sitting on your hands, doing nothing about your unhappiness and staying in a job that depletes you, it's much worse for you. A study has shown that sticking it out despite your unhappiness can lead to illness and emotional exhaustion. So rather than dwelling on the time that you'll lose, start imagining a career that challenges you, boosts your happiness, which is imperative. If you've got all of this other stuff on your plate, which we know as women we have, you can't be going into work every day thinking to yourself, this is shite. And then you've got to feel some fulfillment from it.
It's interesting. This article, if I read it pre-having children, I probably would have thought, whatever, I'm working my way up. I'm enjoying it. Who cares if I'm a bit depleted? This all looks good on my CV. This all looks good to the people around me. Keep going, keep going, keep going. Whereas now I think to myself, what the fuck is the point of all of this? Obviously, we have to put food on the table. We have to earn money. But outside of that, that next level, I do sometimes question myself in terms of when I am working too hard or I am doing too much. And I wonder, is this ego related? What am I doing this all for?
Well, one thing I'll say is that this isn't the first girlfriend that's come to me recently with this problem that she's having at her workplace. There's been a couple, and I feel like over the years I've had the same issues and I've gotten advice from my friends. But the best piece of advice I've gotten is don't wait for that aha moment. So if you're hating it and you've been feeling like that for, I don't know, an extended period of time, more than a month, that aha moment is never going to come if you're not pushing it. So like,
there's not necessarily an aha moment.
You don't need it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point.
Yeah. And one of the quotes that I found from this article that I thought was so spot on was this: never mistake knowledge for wisdom. One helps you make a living and the other helps you make a life. Look, if you're a bit like me and you're kind of in a bit of a pickle at the moment, you're like, I'm not moving up. I feel like I'm moving sideways. And I'm not unhappy, but I feel like I could be doing more. You're probably doing better than most. And it's also very normal to feel like sometimes you might need to hit pause and take a step back and look at all the other things that are making you happy. And maybe your career isn't going to necessarily be number one. And for this period in your life, that's actually okay. That's what I keep telling myself anyway.
This is really interesting, Lozzie, because sometimes I think that we find it sad that it's often the woman at the mother's career that takes a pause without knowing the reasons. When we read headline articles about female CEOs of public companies, for example. But then sometimes I wonder, is it the profound experience of motherhood and how it can rewire our brain and how it can change our set of values that sometimes makes us question the workplace more and what we're doing for money? And maybe it's not sad at all when it is taking a pause for the right reasons for that, Ma.
Maybe, but I do think in order to actually evaluate that properly, you need to take a step out of it.
Yeah.
So if you're in the grind and you're unhappy and you're like, oh, I feel like I could be doing more. I'm not loving this. I'm not fulfilled. I can't stand my manager. My team isn't great. It's really difficult to make an educated decision when you're sitting in it.
Yes.
Sometimes the best thing to do is remove yourself, even for like a weekend, and take an extra day and actually sit there. And I mean, this is a bit naff, but write a list. Be like, what do I actually enjoy and what do I not?
Mm.
Because more times than not, even a change, when they say a change is as good as a holiday, I genuinely agree with that. Sometimes I think it is.
I agree with that too. Is your friend who said that a mother?
Yes. Yeah.
And do you think that you, since motherhood, I would definitely say yes to this question for me. Do you think you sit down and reassess things more of how you want your life to look, both in a paid work and everyday sense?
Yes, but I feel like I'm more flippant with that. So I don't put as much pressure on myself. Like if something doesn't feel like a yes, then it's a no. Whereas previously I'd mull on it and be like, oh, it's a good opportunity. I'm not sure. Should I do it? Where I'm at now, it's more that innate feeling of
yes. So that's a resounding yes then. you know your boundaries more and you're more willing to act on them, essentially.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my boundaries aren't very good, but if they were slightly better,
we'll probably work on it. It's a work in progress.
That's something for next time. Exactly right.
I really love this sentiment. I think sometimes stepping down can be a positive. We don't always need to frame it as a negative. Of course, there are cases where it upsets us and it winds us up that it's always the mum stepping back, or feels like it's always the mum stepping back, but it doesn't have to be a negative, which I love.
Yes, and I will say one thing on that. I think sometimes we misunderstand what taking a step back can look like for a male partner, or even a partner, to be honest. It doesn't necessarily have to be male. I don't know why I said that, probably because I'm in that relationship. It can look different for different people. So an example would be, we, Ryan and I, have a lot going on, like, with our family at the moment. Like, our kids are at an age where they're more demanding. We love a holiday, as everybody who listens probably knows.
Loz loves a holiday. Hayden actually always laughs at the way Loz talks about holidays, like it's breathing air or something.
I know. I really like it. Ryan, for example, had this job at work that he could have gone for, as in like a
step up.
What's it called? God, this is so bad. Not a step up. It's like a tender that they could have won.
Oh, sorry. Like a contract.
Yeah, that they could have put their hat in the ring. And he was like, I just don't know that it's worth it. It would be nice, absolutely nice to have, but for the additional stress that it would bring at this point, I'm not sure that it's worth doing.
It's interesting too, because once upon a time, that stress would have sat on his shoulders alone. But now that you have children together, he probably is aware that that stress on him leads to more stress on you, because he'd be busier and it means yes. more stress with the kids, and it's a much bigger conversation.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is that with your partner, there are things that they're probably saying no to. It's just the conversations that you're not across.
Yeah, it's more grey. It's less black and white. That's a really interesting point.
So it's something to be mindful of.
Okay, I love that we're saying that pauses, which is the work that Mother Untitled does, which is a great Instagram account to follow. The pauses are not always a bad thing.
They're not.
I think something that can make a lot of us women feel unstuck is, particularly after motherhood, but maybe not only after motherhood, is when you do really crave that pause or that change of direction, and you've been working so hard and hustling, hustling, hustling in this career, and then you start to question whether it's what you want. So I think it's really comforting to know that a pause is not always a bad thing. You've really enlightened me this morning, Lozzie.
It really isn't, Lou. I'm glad.
The timing of your article could not have been better with mine. We actually only saw this piece of news this morning and decided to throw it in, and it is totally on topic. I'm going to play a clip from Queen Lily Allen.
Well, as I said before, I never really had a strategy when it comes to career. But yes, my children ruined my career. I mean, I love them and they complete me, but in terms of, like, you know, pop stardom, totally ruined it. Yeah.
That's such a good answer. I'm so happy to hear someone say that. Everyone's like, no, of course not.
Does not mix. And really annoys me when people say you can have it all, because quite frankly, you can't. And, you know, some people choose their career over their children and that's their prerogative. But, you know, my parents were quite absent when I was a kid. And I feel like that really left some, like, nasty scars that I'm not willing to, you know, to repeat on mine. And so I chose stepping back and concentrating on them. And I'm glad that I've done that, because I think they're pretty well-rounded people.
Some pretty strong statements that I think would make some, particularly mothers, unfortunately, because we always feel the pressure more than dads for some reason, feel, I guess, perhaps a little bit attacked. I want to know, what's your first thought when you hear Lily Allen talk about that?
I just think she's so real. For me, it's so true, and it's so refreshing to hear someone say that, because I think for so long we've had this idea jammed down our throats, like, you can have it all, like, you go, girl, you can do it. And you can, if you want to sacrifice stuff and if you want to put in the extra hours and stay up to midnight, you can. Your life is determined by what you want to do. Like, you are in control. But I'm like, far out, mate. Like, most people don't want to do that. So I agree with her. I'm not sure that I agree with the fact that kids ruin your career. I think maybe in her situation, it's very unique. Like, she's a pop star, a musician, very in the public eye. It would be very different. And it's kind of hard for me to relate to, because that's not the world that I live in.
You're a great singer, though.
Lucy, jeez.
So, darling, I'm just as bad as you. It's okay.
I'm quite good for those that are listening. I'll sing you another day. one of my many hidden talents. The word ruin probably isn't the word I would use, but does it significantly change it? Yeah, it does. Like it does make things harder and it makes things different and you've got other people to think about. So there is a shift.
What do you think about her saying that her parents working so much left scars and that she's sort of saying there that she's chosen her children and other people are choosing their careers? How does that make you feel hearing her word it like that? Because I wouldn't say she's not attacking in the way she says it.
No.
But they are strong comments.
Yeah, they are. But again, I think it comes down to circumstances. When I look at my family, my dad worked nonstop. Like he worked for himself growing up. He wasn't around a lot. And I don't think I have a negative experience of it. I'm so close with my dad and it hasn't affected me in the way that it maybe affected her.
Yeah. And I guess maybe their level was different. Maybe they were traveling on the weekends. Maybe they were out every night. Maybe it looked really different because I think they are creatives that work in film and
yes,
TV or something. So maybe theirs was a next level version that makes sense.
I also do think it depends on the needs of your child. Not that I'm any bloody expert. I mean, I've got two, so I'm still trying to figure it out. I've got no idea what the frig I'm doing. Most days I'm just winging it. But my two children have very different personalities. So here's a classic example for you. I've just started Sienna in tennis, right? I mean, for fun. She's no elite pro. She has not got the best hand-eye coordination. She ain't going to be the next, you know, whoever.
You're like, I don't even know a tennis star.
Yeah, I don't. I'm like, I actually don't. Ash Barty, whatever. See?
Well done. Well done.
No, like she's just having fun. But she's been a couple of times. The first time she was just so desperate for me to say it. She's like, look, Mom. Like, she calls me Mom at the moment. Look, Mom. It's so weird.
She's watching something in American on TV, I think.
Something on YouTube. She probably shouldn't be watching. It's like, look, Mom, look at me. Like, you know, she really wants me there to, like, see her and give her that feedback of, you're doing great. Well done. I'm so proud of you. Whereas, like, I remember as a kid, it never bothered me when I was playing sport, even growing up, to have my parents there. Like, it just wasn't something that I looked back at.
That's interesting. So I'm a Sienna for sure.
I was never like that. I'm like, oh, it's such a strange trait. Like, I wonder if Zave will be like that. Zave doesn't seem as needy in that way, like emotionally.
It doesn't seem that way so far.
Not yet.
It's interesting that you say that because I don't remember my dad not being there in any sad way. He obviously worked a lot. I mean, not obviously for anyone that doesn't know, but my mum mostly stayed home. She had periods of working in the family business. Outside of that, she stayed home and she did study an interior night course at one stage. And I remember, like, I'd cry when she'd leave, the poor woman.
Oh, Lou.
Hate that for her now. Clingy AF I am. Still to this day, need my mummy. Anyway, I remember the days when my dad would come to netball and I remember those bits and pieces. So it's really interesting you say that. Kids are different. Do I remember him coming home from work late? No, I don't. He was there and he was a loving dad.
Yeah. It's so dependent on your kids and it's so dependent on their personalities.
Yes.
And what they need to feel safe, secure, loved, motivated, all of those things. I understand where her comment comes from because perhaps she was a child that needed specific things from her parents and they didn't give them.
Yeah, and I think she was because I've listened to quite a few podcasts with her. I actually will recommend the Dolly Alderton podcast episode with her and the Andrew Denton one. They're both brilliant.
Yeah, but I think for everybody else, you know your children best and what they're going to need to thrive, but you also know your personal and financial circumstances best. And sometimes there is give and take and it is sad when you have to be like, oh, look, I can't go to that because I have to work. But maybe the benefits down the track are that you've got more finances to be able to do more cute things together. Like, it's a lot of pressure to place on someone.
This is exactly why I wanted to bring this to you, because any mum that sees this, because it is going around on social media, might feel really shit about themselves. They might have that moment of, gee, why do I go to work, to paid work 4 or 5 days a week? But firstly, I want to call out that I have a feeling Lily's example of what choosing career over motherhood would look like is extreme, because if she decided, as you say, her life's very different. If she kept singing, that's travel, that's live concerts, that's a very different schedule to working 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. So that's why I wanted to talk about this specifically with you, because I knew that you'd make those mums that do engage in full-time paid work or close to.
Yeah, but and she's also got royalties from her music. Like by her taking a step back.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's
still
earning
money.
Exactly.
Well, that would actually be nice. I wish someone would pay me royalties for something I'd made in the past.
See? Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So it's a, I understand where she's coming from. I also think you need to look at your children and what their needs are and the way that you can best help them thrive and, you know, support them at different phases and stages of their life. I don't think any two kids are the same. And I genuinely think some kids are like, please don't watch me play sport. I don't need you here. It's embarrassing. Go away. Let me do my thing. And then maybe there's some other kids that are like, where's my mum? I really want her here. There's going to be pressure on yourself all throughout your life. I do agree with her in that something has got to give. You know, you can't have it all. And you probably don't want it all. Like we've had that conversation about when you go to an all-you-can-eat buffet, you stuff yourself. Yeah, you're sick.
Disgusting.
You're like, want to eat all that shit.
You sit on the toilet afterwards.
Yeah, you're feeling gross. You don't want it anyway.
No.
But society makes you think, oh, you know, go girl, you got this, you can do it.
And that girl boss era really is coming to an end, isn't it? I hate the idea of having it all. No one should want it all. It's exhausting, as we've spoken about. I love the buffet analogy. I miss that analogy. We should talk about it more often. It's a great analogy.
Yeah, but I think what Lily's trying to say is for her, that's her experience and that's what makes sense. And she doesn't want to place her traumas that she suffered as a child onto her own children. And that's like other things. I mean, you'll do the same, Lily. Like, let's just say you feel like your mum never gave you enough lollies. And so you go, oh,
I could have had a few extra to be fair.
I want to make sure that I don't do that with my children. Everyone has that baggage. Like, I don't know anyone that doesn't, you know?
So true.
Like, in weird ways. Like,
that idea of reparenting yourself based off how you were parented and what you don't want to repeat. Everyone has that. That's such a good point. So for anyone listening out there, you're not a bad parent if you're working 5 days a week, 4 days a week, whatever it is. If you weren't working, maybe you'd be incredibly stressed about money and maybe that would make you just as absent those 5 days a week that you were home. So I think Loz has just said it beautifully. Every child is different. Every circumstance is different. You're all doing your best. So if you did see Lily Allen's posts, I hope this brings some comfort. So, Lozzie, for today's poll, in celebration of these go-to guides that are coming very soon, we've been talking a lot about what we learn with hindsight and how that informed what we put into these guides, because we want other mums and other parents to not have to go through it the first time to then figure out what they do need. So the three questions today were, with hindsight, what do you wish you knew about what to expect in the postpartum or around postpartum planning? The second one is the same question, but for breastfeeding, and lastly, for childcare. So I'm just going to quick fire, give a whole lot of these tips, and you butt in at any point with what's resonating, what you want to add on, all of that.
Okay.
So first things first, this is postpartum. Here I go, quick fire.
Okay.
How painful it is when your milk comes in, and also how painful the baby blues are. I wish I knew more about the baby blues. I'm really glad one friend told me, but it was only one. I wish I understood more about how to prepare for a colicky baby that just won't sleep.
Oh, feels.
Yeah, that was my niece. Oh,
my Lord. I had such a good baby first time around. I genuinely thought, what are people whinging about? And Zave was a fucking nightmare.
We love you, Zave, if you ever hear this, but you were naughty baby.
My actual God.
Lucky he's
killed
so
me.
Pleasant when he's awake, hey?
Yeah.
The next person says, saved more money in preparation for mat leave. That's a good one. We actually have a section on that in the postpartum planning guide, that you will find a new rhythm you love and know life won't go back to exactly the same, and that's okay.
True.
The moment you become a parent, you can no longer plan your time. The loss of control was shocking to me. That is a really good one. It is very hard to organize your time, especially in the early days. I think I got into a rhythm with Ray. And now I'm back in the stage of feeling like things just happen on a much different schedule than they used to.
I'm so weird with that one. I think that I'm the opposite. I felt more so in control for like the first 4 months before I implemented any routines. Like I was really tired and exhausted. But because I had no routine or nothing going on, I was like, well, fuck it. He's just
I know what you mean, actually.
Feral anyway. I may as well go for a walk and try and enjoy my life.
But getting two kids out in the early days, I find myself late to everything.
I'm always late.
Do you find that you had a period? Yeah, okay, that's good. I was like, don't tell me you're on time to everything. But oh, I do agree with you with never. That sense of feeling in control, because you could just work around your schedule as opposed to the baby. So that's
yeah, because so they're just useless.
Yeah. Gorgeous, but useless little thing.
Yeah.
One, plan better financially. Two, support times 1,000,000, this person says.
Yes.
Couldn't agree more. We touch on both of that in the guide. How long it would take to heal, how hard the sleep deprivation is. Another big one that we feel, lie the fuck down, as Naomi Chrysalakis says in our postpartum planning guide.
Yep.
How depleted my body would be and how important it was to nourish it and to rest. That's one thing that you and I have spoken about in the past, and that's probably more prominent in our breastfeeding guide, but very important. And we do still touch on it in the postpartum one. And the last person says, you're going to need to spell out what you need emotionally from your husband.
Spot on. We talk about this in depth.
We do. That's what we talk about. What you should talk about 3 months in the lead up, 2 months in the lead up, 1 month in the lead up. So I think that's a really good advice and very, very on topic with our guide. Go, Naomi and us, for seeing the people's needs and going up to them. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. Hello. Let's get into the next one. This one is breastfeeding. I wish I knew to size your pump flanges properly.
I still, you know what? That's a great one. But I still, even with like the little centimeter things, I still found it really difficult. I actually ended up just buying 3 different sizes and going based on comfort.
Yeah, it is a bit confusing, isn't it? Mm. The next person says how long it takes to breastfeed a newborn. That surprised me. I did not realize how long that whole thing would take. You're basically feeding again by the time you're finished. I wish I'd thought more about a better balance at home of sharing the load with feeding, with my husband doing more feeds.
Yes. You've got to get him involved early if you can. If they'll take a bottle, absolutely.
Especially with bottle refusal being so common, which is actually what another person says. I wish I knew.
We definitely talk about that.
We talk about that a lot because I went through it pretty decently with Ray. He pretty much didn't take a bottle from 6 months. Yeah, that was when it stopped, actually.
That's right.
So one other person does say how common it is for bottle refusal to occur. So we have some tips on how to navigate that.
This is a good section, actually, in our go-to guide. It's a really good one with super handy hands-on how to get your baby to accept a bottle.
Next person says, no idea that it could be easy with first child and then hard with second. I feel like that's something you can relate to.
That was exactly me. Oh, actually opposite, but yep.
Oh, with feeding, sorry. I'm thinking more in terms of discomfort and sleep. Beg my pardon. Next person, get bub on a bottle early for my independence and get partner to do a dream bottle feed while I sleep. Another brilliant piece of advice. Getting that bottle early is so important. This person also says how time-consuming breastfeeding is.
Yep.
How trapped they'd feel because the baby didn't take the bottle, and that is not easy. Again, I can relate hard to that. And the last person, that normal in the early days can also seem like your baby is hungry and not getting enough. We actually go into both the postpartum and breastfeeding guide. There's a section on what is considered normal newborn behavior. So hopefully that's helpful here.
Yes.
How am I, Loz, by the way? I just said you jump in with any anecdotes and I pretty much just jumped in on all of that. I'm so sorry.
No, you didn't. I have jumped in. I have. Why are you apologizing?
I'm going to let you jump in and stop taking the floor on the next one, which is childcare. And I feel like this one, you really steered the ship on this one. So I will let you speak to it. Childcare. I wish there was a better way to compare options to find one that aligns without having to visit them all. I wish there was a way, but there isn't, is there? Yeah. I just jumped in again.
No, it's a good point, but it's not easy, sadly.
Yeah, because like even going through some sort of online guide wouldn't work. You actually have to be there in person.
You need to meet and be with the people.
Yeah, you do. You need a vibe check.
You need to get a vibe for the room.
Yeah.
Even sense, smells, other kids, what they look like. You must go. I reckon it's so imperative. But that stuff, again, like as we say in our guide, there's stuff that you can do when you haven't already had your kid and you're freaking out and you need to enroll them while you're pregnant that relieves some of that pressure.
And we do have checklists related to that in this guide too.
Yeah.
The next person says, first-time parents need to know more about easing their kids in for the first time. So some tips around that. That's a really good one.
It's a a great one. That's in the guide. Yes.
How wonderful it is to share the love of your child and to see them learn things that I didn't teach. That's a really good one.
I mean, that's everything for me.
That's just a bit of a nice reminder if you are starting daycare now or childcare, daycare, very American, that there are really great benefits to it and you don't need to feel like shit about leaving your child behind.
On that, I received an email yesterday, actually, from one of the educators at Zave's daycare. He's just started. And they, you know, they always talk about what milestones or goals do you have for your child? And I'm not joking. I was like, oh, you know, it would be nice for him to eat food that wasn't beige. So if there's any things that he's loving at daycare, like, let me know and I can try make them or attempt to do something similar at home. But I also said, if it isn't too much to ask, you know, I've seen other kids his age blowing kisses.
Oh, cute.
I'm like, it'll be great if Mummy wants me a kiss. And she was like, so the educational goals are that you wanted to blow a kiss. I'm like, yes, probably number one, second child. I really would like that.
I reckon that's really good. We're not putting too much pressure on him.
I mean, that's hand eye.
Yeah.
To the mouth.
Like it's handy because it is handy too. It's handy to know how to blow a kiss.
And it's also handy. I just want kisses from my sweet angel boy.
I reckon that's really beautiful. Better than giving them silly little milestones. Who cares about the milestones? Just give me love and I'll give it to you back. Someone said, in seriousness, don't love that on public holidays you have to pay even though it's shut. That we talk about all of the finances and opens and closures related to that too. Oh my God, I just jumped in again.
No, stop saying that. It's good.
No, you hang up first. Okay, next one. That you have to sell a kidney to be able to afford it. A few people do talk about how expensive it is and how crushing it has been for them.
It's really expensive, which is why, as we chat about, you got a budget, you need to understand the expenses, you need to really understand how the rebate works so we simplify it for you so it's not confusing. There's some great tools that you can use which we go into in more depth. Don't worry, that's front and center, my friend. That's exactly what we thought about.
And it is good to be prepared for, isn't it? Because it can hit you in the face a bit. This person says that your kids may very well love it and will bring you a new village, so be open to meeting new people. A lovely sentiment.
Yes, very sweet.
I've really noticed that village thing. I feel like Ray's educators are a part of our village and I didn't know to expect that actually. Like I feel like they're invested in his life. They love him and they want to see him do well.
Yeah, they do.
So I think that's really true. And that's something, it's good to be reminded of that because it can feel like a transactional thing, daycare, but there's a lot more to it and there's a lot more special about it.
I also think for your own peace of mind, if your child gravitates towards one educator, it makes you feel more comfortable when you leave knowing that they've got like a little bestie there that if they're upset or if they trip or whatever, they can go to that one person. That's the nicety.
Yeah, it's also more for you, don't you think? You're thinking to yourself, oh, you're here. This is good. Yes. I feel okay about this. You're going to take him. You're going to get a biscuit with him. And we all feel okay about it now.
Yeah.
This is another really great one for anyone feeling guilty and for people that don't have grandparents around. Had no choice, no grandparent help and felt very guilty for sending her. Wasted energy. She loves it.
Yep. They love it. I don't think I've ever heard of any kids that don't like childcare. As in the first couple of months can be tough. But
for the most part, they do find their groove.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Someone else said to sign up as soon as you're pregnant and we go into that. And then lastly, what to look for in a good daycare. And we quite literally have a checklist exactly on that.
Yep.
Wow, I just kept butting and butting and butting in. But now you get the floor, Lozzie, because you're going to give a much better tip than me, as you always do.
Okay, my tip comes from this morning. In this day and age, don't comment on the color of kids' clothing and position boys as blue and girls as pink. A story around this, it was raining this morning. Sienna went to tennis. She had like a little, what's it called, rain jacket thing on. Naturally, in the first 2 minutes of her playing, she wanted to take it off. It was pink because everything with her has to be pink at the moment. It's what she chooses. That's what she wants to wear. Zave, my youngest son, my only son, the love of and light of my absolute world.
Oh, God. He's not going to have any issues when he goes out and finds a partner in the world, is he?
Oh, God. Was with me because I couldn't find a freaking park at daycare to drop him off. So I was like, fuck it, he's coming to tennis. And obviously because Sienna was hot and it was raining, I was like, oh, she's taking it off. I'll put it on him. So this lady, same age as us, it wasn't like an older lady, like a generational thing. She's like, oh, and how old's your daughter? And I was like, oh, my son. She goes, oh, it's confusing. Why is he in pink?
And she's our age.
Our age.
If someone 70 said that, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to let this slide because I can't be bothered arguing with a 70-year-old or rolling my eyes at.
I said, because he likes it. As in, I genuinely thought to myself, number one, it's his sister's. Number two, I don't give a shit. If that's the colour that he grows up liking, if that's what I want to put him in, that's what I'll put him in. If it looks good. And I thought he looked beautiful in it.
He would look stunning in pink.
He looks beautiful in it. But in this day and age, shut the fuck up when it comes to commenting on gender-specific colours for your kids. Yeah. Dress your kids however you want. Don't comment. That's my tip for this week because it enraged me.
Yeah, that's fair enough. How's being annoyed that it confused her? Like it was your duty of care to not confuse her about your child's gender? So annoying. It's funny this morning of all mornings because for the first time ever, when I got Ray up this morning, Ray was in a blue sleep suit and Posey was in a pink sleep suit. First time ever. Posey has one pink outfit. And I was thinking to myself, wow, you look very backwards this morning. So very interesting timing.
I'm all for dressing kids in whatever colours you want, but I'm like, when it comes to commenting on it, like, why is he in pink? Because he feels like it, mate. I feel like it.
Yeah.
Like, who cares?
It looks great. It looks perfect.
Is that going to be the topic of our conversation this morning? Like, I'm already having a bad morning, as you can see. Like, just
comment
lay
on
off.
My bad hair day. Leave my kid alone.
Far so out.
My tip for today is to think about the 8 to 12 week mark of your postpartum. Life starts to get a bit busier. And I think naturally, because that help starts to disappear, those meals aren't getting dropped off probably any longer. Partner is probably well and truly back at work, if not already. You tend to forget when you don't have food in a way that you don't in the early days, because in the early days, normally, if you're lucky, there's so much of it that you don't have to think too much about it. I had some meal train items in the freezer yesterday, and I also saved some of my postpartum fund to do new bub club this week. So we've been working a little bit harder to get these go-to guides out. I'm also starting to record Ready or Not episodes again next week. And so this week we had three nights of dinner brought to us by new bub club, and I cut back in other areas. And I kept a few things in the freezer from meal train that I've been able to pull out. So not
Perfect.
Even just from a financial point of view, but also from a practical point of view, think about that 8 to 12 week mark. Maybe it's leaving a little bit of that money that you've planned for your postpartum aside for then, or maybe it's going, you know what, we have so much food for now. Let's put all of that in the freezer and that can be my 8 to 12 week food.
I think that's a great tip, Lou, particularly as I found personally that was the time when my adrenaline started to wear off and I started to feel tired and cranky and on edge. And if Ryan didn't have dinner or like something there for me, I'd genuinely, if he was like, oh, what's for dinner tonight, darling? I'd be like,
oh,
porridge.
I would pop
eat the
off.
Porridge, eat the Nutri-Grain, Cocoa Pops, whatever you can find in our fridge.
I would offer to cook it for him and burn the fuck out of it. Oh, and on that note, I feel like we need to wrap up.
We are done. So if you have loved listening to today's episode, please leave us a review. We love positive reviews, but if you got to leave a little neggy one, just do it quietly, you know?
DM us. Don't put it up on the page. We'll take the feedback. We'll change the podcast. Don't leave it on the page.
And follow us on ReadyOrNot.pod. Chat to you next week.